Welcome to Finish Well Radio, where changing the world starts with changing the home, with your host, Meredith Curtis.
Hi, I'm Meredith Curtis, and welcome to Finish Well Radio. I'm so excited that you're here. A couple days from now is 4th of July when we celebrate the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And so I thought it would be really fun to do a show about what led up to us signing that Declaration of Independence. Well, not us, our founding fathers. And so today's show is going to be all about what brought our founding fathers and mothers to a place where they said, enough, we are free. And we're going to start way, 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 way back before colonial times. We know that colonial America was British. There were 13 British colonies under the crown. And the British had a heritage of English common law. And they had a heritage of freedom even before they started colonizing America and other places around the world. Our English heritage is one of freedoms that today are protected by the Constitution, but back then they were English common law. They were rights that our founding fathers didn't just make up these rights. They experienced these rights because of English common law. So the very first one was that you had a right to trial by a jury of your peers. And if someone accused you, you had the right to face your accusers. You also had the right to have your private property respected and protected. And everyone from the king to the peasant in a hut was accountable to God and the law of the land. So there's a saying, in fact, someone wrote a book about this called Lex Rex, law is king. In other words, everyone's under the law. No one is above the law. Even the king of the land is not above the law. So those were things that the Englishmen who were our founding fathers were Englishmen, English citizens, British citizens, and so they believed that these things were their God-given rights. And so they valued them. They valued them as Englishmen, and they valued them later as Americans. And so another thing that you need to keep in mind when we're talking about our founding fathers and going back in time to about the 1750s, 60s, and 1770s is that you have got a lot of autonomy. They're used to a lot of autonomy in the colonies, and the Pilgrims, they came over before they got off their boat. They signed the Mayflower contract saying that, hey, we're going to vote for people and we're going to make decisions. And the same thing in Virginia. Virginia had the House of Burgesses. In New England, they had their town meetings. They had a lot of autonomy. If you remember your history, the Massachusetts Bay Colony, a lot of times it wasn't actually the king who sent people over. You know, he gave his blessing, but it was these companies. They get together and the stockholders made decisions and they said, hey, let's go plant a colony in America or Bermuda or in the Caribbean, you know, and so they're sending people there. And so what the Massachusetts Bay Colony did is that they got together some merchants, businessmen, lawyers, pastors, and they actually formed a company, and every single stockholder was going to Massachusetts. So all the decision makers of that colony were right there in the colony. So this was the kind of autonomy that they experienced in the colonial times. It was a lot of freedom and a lot of making decisions that applied to them. So, no, they weren't deciding should England go to war or not, but they were deciding, do we allow this to go on in this county in Virginia? They got together and they made decisions like that. So local decisions were at a local level, colony decisions were at a colony level, and that was the kind of freedom that they were used to. Things, they are going to begin to change a little with the King George's, but I just want you to get this picture. It's not like they woke up and said, oh my goodness, we don't want to be oppressed anymore. We just want to be free. No, they enjoyed a lot of freedom. And it was when that freedom was begun to be taken away that they said, no way, this freedom is from God. And we have rights as Englishmen and you can't take this freedom away. I think that's real important when you're talking about the American Revolution, because a lot of people get that confused and they paint kind of a different picture. But until things started to change, and we're going to talk about how they changed, they had a lot of freedom in the colonies and they enjoyed all their rights as English citizens. And there's a great heritage of freedom from England, from Great Britain. Our British heritage is one of a lot of autonomy, a lot of freedom, a lot of recognition of the rights God has given people on this planet. So there's all this stuff going on. As most of the early settlers had a strong faith in Jesus, and as time went on, their children and their grandchildren didn't necessarily have that same devotion to the Lord. Cotton Mather, he's a real well-known pastor, the late 1600s, early 1700s, and he's just crying out for revival, and other people are crying out for revival. Please, God, send revival. And God did. He answered. And he sent the Great Awakening, and you can recognize names like George Whitefield and Jonathan Edwards and David Brainerd and these men that we remember now. But it wasn't just them. It was so many. I mean, God just poured out his spirit on the colonies, and it was all over. All 13 colonies actually experienced the Great Awakening. It wasn't in one little place. It was throughout the colonies. And God was moving, and hearts were turning to him. And what happened was a permanent change in the character of the people in the colonies. And it crossed denominational lines. So you had Episcopalians, you had Presbyterians, you had Congregationalists, you had Baptists, and they were all experiencing this fresh new faith in Jesus, this new devotion to the Word of God, to living for the Lord. And as well as, of course, it crossing denominational lines, like I said before, it crossed colony lines, and it began to unite the Americans in this faith in Jesus and this devotion to him. And that was really, really exciting, because that was one of the first beginnings of there starting to be kind of a unity among the colonies. Because before that, it's like you're a Virginian, you were from Maryland, you were from Delaware. There wasn't really a lot that drew them all together as colonists and as, you know, what they would later become known as Americans. And another thing that brought a little bit of unity to, well, a lot of unity to the colonies was when Britain got in a war with France. Now, that is not surprising. If you study some European history, you just see for years and years and years, and then Britain and France go to war, and then Britain and France go to war, and they're always at war, and the kings and queens are marrying each other, so that who does this throne belong to? Someone in Britain or someone in France? Yeah, they're always going to war, and so they go to war. We know it as the French and Indian War. Over in Europe, they called it the 7 Years' War, and of course, it was 7 years. And during that time, the colonists fought with the British commander. So a British commander would come over, but many times he would just have an army of colonial, the militia. Every colony, every city really had men that were trained to defend them from any kind of attack, foreign invader. And so they had these men that were trained to defend their families, basically, and their towns and their colonies. But these men, they fought with the British, and so they fought against the Indians and the French. There were some Indians on the British side, some Indians on the French side. Well, several things happened as a result of that war. One of the things was that because they ended up having to fight the Native Americans didn't fight like the British. The British would just line up, pull out their gun, pow, pow, pow. Then the next line would come forward, and they wore these bright red coats. Here, come and shoot me. The Indians didn't do that. They hid, and then they jumped out. What we call guerrilla warfare today, that's the kind of warfare they engaged in. So the colonists learned to do that. And if they're going to beat the French and the Indians, because the French fought like that too, they learned the ways from the Native Americans. So if they're going to beat them, they had to learn a different style of warfare, which would help them later in winning the Revolutionary War. But we're not going to really talk about the Revolutionary War. We're just going to get up to the Declaration of Independence, because that's what we celebrate on 4th of July. So here we have all these Americans, George Washington was one, he served as a colonel, and all these different Americans, colonists, they're serving in the war, and they're learning to work together. This unit from Pennsylvania, they're in a battle, and they're working side by side with this unit from Maryland or Virginia, and so there's this crossing and this mixture, and so it was really, really exciting because number one, it gave them some confidence. It was impressive to the British. Wow, these guys can fight. But it also brought them a sense of unity and a sense of confidence that if we ever need to, we can fight. And again, that fear of the Lord was tempering that from them being rebellious or angry and things like that. So after the war was over, I told you there were some Native Americans that fought with the British. Well, after the war was over, the British had made a promise to them. They said, if y'all fight with us, then we're going to give you this land. And so we're making this line that kind of goes up, kind of follows the mountains up the East Coast, and everything between that and the land that belonged to France, which later became America's land with the Louisiana Purchase. But there's this strip of land, and that was all going to be left alone. No white men, no European men were going to cross into that land, but it was going to belong to the Native Americans, and they weren't going to touch that. Now, Great Britain made that promise to the Native Americans, and they kept it. And so you have the proclamation line of 1763. Now, the problem with that and why it upset the American colonists so much is because they were not like their European great-grandfathers. They were not. They were adventurers. They wanted to move westward. They wanted their own land. They wanted to spread out. They wanted to keep exploring. And so they were really upset by this proclamation line of 1763 because it fenced them in. And that just wasn't popular. Even though, of course, really, if you're objective, you realize that Britain did do the right thing in keeping their promise to those Native Americans. But by keeping their promise, they were punishing the colonists who wanted to keep exploring. Another thing, of course, if you ever know, war brings a lot of debt. And once a war is over, you've got to pay off that debt. And so the easiest way to pay off debt is to tax your people. And so that's what Great Britain did. They started taxing the American colonists. And the American colonists were kind of upset by that, by the different taxes. Now, there had been taxes before. Different taxes had made them angry and others they didn't really care about. But now these new taxes came along and they were pretty intense. Nothing like the taxes we pay today, though, I have to say. So what happened is some representatives from several colonies got together and they sent a protest letter to the king. And so Ben Franklin in 1776, he loads everything up and he takes this letter and he appears before Parliament. He's appealing about the Stamp Act. The Stamp Act especially made them angry, because the Stamp Act was so many things, like paper, documents, all this stuff had to have a stamp on it, a royal stamp. It's kind of like today we have to have a license for this and a license for that, and that's just a tax. And that's what this was. The stamp was just a tax. It was just expensive to do normal things now, stuff that they could just do, and now they were having to pay this tax. And it was really, really frustrating. When Ben Franklin went to Parliament, they did listen, and they repealed the Stamp Act. And that was a huge thing. However, then they passed another law, and it was almost like they were saying, we know you don't like this one, so we're going to get rid of it, but we're going to do another tax on you. We're going to pass another law because we can do this. We can do whatever we want. You're just the colonists, and we're Parliament. And, of course, how many colonial representatives were there in Parliament? None. There were none. And so that was what was so frustrating, that they're saying, well, we can't be taxed if we're not represented. If we're citizens enough to be taxed, we need to be being represented in Parliament. And so that began to be a big cry throughout the colonies, because the Stamp Act affected everyone. And the New York Assembly, I love this, they just got together and said, oh, we're just going to ignore this. We're going to ignore some of these laws. There were others. I'm not going to go into all of them, because that's stuff you kind of learn in history, the Quartering Act and all that stuff. But they just refused to obey some of the laws. So the king, King George III, was really angry, and he just said, okay, I'm dissolving the assembly in New York. Now, you have to remember that in history, when kings dissolve their parliaments, their congresses, their House of Burgesses, whatever they dissolve, it does not go well for them because people don't like that. People who are used to making decisions, who are used to voting on things, they don't like it when the king comes along and says, okay, you're done, you're out. And so that's what happened. So another thing that was hard for the colonists is that a theory of economics, don't tune me out now, but a theory of economics is called mercantilism, and that's basically that you protect your country's products. And so you put a big high tax or tariff on anything coming in from another country. And that's why Adam Smith in 1776, same year we signed the Declaration of Independence, wrote this big book called Wealth of the Nations. And he basically wrote it against mercantilism, saying, let's talk about free trade. Let's talk about a free market. And so very, very interesting. But that meant that the Americans could only buy British stuff. So if the French made something better, they had to pay this huge tariff on it. And so it just made life more expensive and it made life harder. And remember, now Britain is trying to pay off their debt. The French and Indian War didn't do anything positive for the colonists as far as they didn't gain anything by it. It was really England's war with France. But they did lose a lot because now the British soldiers, when the war's over, they're just there. They're not leaving. They're still around. They're wanting to be taken care of and paid for. But the colonists are thinking, hey, we can defend ourselves. Why are you guys here? Go home. And so that's kind of the feeling that's going on in the colonies. It's like, let us live our lives. We've had all this autonomy. We've had all this freedom. And now we want to be able to live our lives. Now, something that some of the colonists in Boston forgot is that it's not wise to throw rocks at someone who's holding a gun. And that's what happened, the Boston Massacre in 1770. Boston was a really feisty little city, and you'll see that a lot is going down in Boston when we look back at what happened, and the news kind of slowly gets out to the other colonies, and they're kind of angry about what's going on. But the Boston Massacre just happened because some people were poking fun at the soldiers, just saying, go home, we don't want you here, blah, blah, blah. But then someone did throw a rock, and eventually, in all the confusion, shots were fired and someone was killed. So the Boston Massacre, honestly, it was one of those things where were the soldiers guilty? Probably not. Probably the guilty party was the rock throwers or the foolish party. I don't know. But in the end, it just outraged all of the colonies. Now, interestingly enough, it was John Adams who would later help write the Declaration of Independence. He was the one who defended this soldier who shot and killed someone, and the soldier did get off. But that was going through the colonies. Look at these British. They are so cruel, they're so mean, and they're hurting our people. And so around that time, well, it had actually been the Sons of Liberty was actually founded in 1765, which was 5 years before the Boston Massacre. But They were formed to stop the Stamp Act, but the Sons of Liberty began to grow. They were started in Boston, but they began to spread to other colonies. And you had people who were Sons of Liberty like Sam Adams, Benedict Arnold, who would later be a traitor, but John Hancock, Patrick Henry, James Otis Jr., Paul Revere, Joseph Warren, Dr. Warren. All of these men that we see in the history books, a lot of them were Sons of Liberty, and it was secret. It wasn't like they announced, hey, I'm a Son of Liberty, because it wasn't the best. They were wanting to make sure that the rights that they had as British citizens, that those rights were honored. And really, their God-given rights were protected. Now, two Sons of Liberty that are really going to be kind of making headlines for a while, and of course, they're from Boston. I told you Boston's a feisty little town, is John Hancock and Samuel Adams. Now, John Hancock was a wealthy businessman, and he was very involved in trade. And in 1768, his ship, the Liberty, was seized. And I'll talk about that again a little bit. But he served later as president of the Second Continental Congress, and he was also served as governor of Massachusetts. But at this time, he's just a businessman. He's tired of the taxes. He's tired of the British soldiers. He wants to go home. And he becomes really good friends with a man named Samuel Adams. Now, Samuel Adams is, of course, a cousin of John Adams, but very different, very feisty guy. He's always into something, and something would happen, and Sam Adams would fire a letter off to Parliament. What do you think about this? Blah, 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 you know, and so that was Sam Adams. He's just a really feisty guy. And of course, over in England, they knew who Sam Adams was. And eventually they started knowing who John Hancock was, because whenever something was going on, they were right in the middle of it, especially like the Boston Tea Party, because they kind of stirred everything up and got the other Sons of Liberty, and they dressed up as Native Americans, went on the ship, the merchant ship with the tea that was heavily, heavily taxed, and they dumped it all into the water. You can just imagine how angry the British owners of the ship were, the British king was, British Parliament was, and they were outraged. And so as a punishment for the Boston Tea Party — the Boston Tea Party was in December, and 3 months later in March 1774, they closed the port of Boston. So now the port's closed. And basically, you can just imagine, Boston was a seaport town. Stuff was coming in from other countries. There was trade. Trade was a big thing. Shipbuilding was a big thing. Almost all the businesses that were in Boston had something to do with the sea, had something to do with sea trade. And so to shut the Boston port, it meant that almost every family suffered intensely from that. And so that was just really, really something negative. And as you can imagine, at that point, other people are hearing about it. They're standing with Boston. They're sending food to Boston. They are saying, we don't like this. People are firing off letters from other colonies to the Parliament. What are you doing? Why are you punishing a whole city? It was arousing a lot of frustration in the colonies. And so this is kind of a real turning point right now for American colonists, because they just cannot believe that in an attempt to flex their muscles, they are going to cause a city full of families to really suffer. And that's really what did happen. A lot of people really suffered in that time. So as a result, later that year in September 1774, the colonial leader said, we don't like this. We're tired of this. Let's appeal to King George and Parliament, and let's let them know we don't like this and we want to see changes. We're tired. And so they did three things at the First Continental Congress. They made a Declaration of Rights, saying these are the rights we have. That would be things that they'd already enjoyed as Englishmen: freedom of trial by jury of peers, freedom of assembly, freedom to representation if they were taxed. Now, that's really critical, because now that they're just making this clear, this is our right. If we're going to be taxed, we need to have representation in Parliament. And also that we're allowed to assemble. That's our God-given right, and we've enjoyed that right for a really long time. And now are you saying that it's going to be tossed away? What's going on here? So that's critical. And the other two things were, they organized a boycott of British goods. So they said, you know what? We're not going to buy British goods anymore. We're just going to make our own stuff, and we're going to sell our own stuff in our stores. They let the king know, if you attack us, we will defend ourselves. So we're not going to fight you, but if you attack us, if you fight us, we're going to defend ourselves. And that was a pretty huge thing. So the First Continental Congress has met, and now they've sent this letter to the king and to Parliament. And so we're going to stop a minute, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're just going to keep going with what are the events that led right up to that signing of the Declaration of Independence.
It's more fun to learn history in the kitchen. Cook and bake your way through time and add fun to history class with our history cookbooks. Ancient History Cookbook starts with Garden of Eden recipes and progresses until the time of Jesus in the Roman Empire. American History Cookbook begins with recipes from Native Americans and ends with American recipes from modern times. Eating food from the time period we're studying has been a hit in our house, especially with the boys. You can purchase Ancient History Cookbook
an American History Cookbook at Amazon.com and PowerlineProd.com. Powerline Productions, being world changers, raising world changers.
You've been listening to Finish Well Radio on the Ultimate Radio Network. Now back to your host, Meredith Curtis.
Well, welcome back. I'm so excited that you're here. We are having a quick ride through history. If you have never really understood where what happened, what brought these founding fathers to a point where they said, enough, we are free, and they signed a declaration of that freedom. And so that's what we're talking about, and we ended with the First Continental Congress, and they've sent this appeal to King George. And so in February of 1775, that's about 6 months after the First Continental Congress met, Parliament considered the appeal, starting in January when they opened up their meetings, and they considered the appeal from the First Continental Congress, and they decided that they would ease up on some of the taxes and they would give in on some of the other issues. So come February, they're giving in, they're saying, okay, we're going to give ground here. But they're still missing key things, and they're still not giving them representation in Parliament. And honestly, right there, if Britain would have done that, we might have a whole different story here. But they didn't. About a month later, in Virginia, see, one of the really big things is that King George III, remember I told you earlier he had dissolved the assembly in New York. Well, he had also dissolved the assembly in Virginia, and he'd said the House of Burgesses was, see you guys. And so they met secretly. They're like, no, we're still meeting. And so they met in a church, and they were meeting together to decide if they should raise a volunteer cavalry and infantry. So that would be soldiers on horses, and then foot soldiers in every Virginia county. That's what they were talking about. They were like, what's going on? Are we heading to war? No, are we going to be attacked? Do we need to defend ourselves? And so they were discussing that. And so people are going back and forth, and they're talking about other things. And then Patrick Henry stands up, and he gives his very famous Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech. Going back in all this, they're not wanting to be rebellious. They're just wanting to protect their God-given rights. And Patrick Henry quotes a lot of scripture in that famous speech. And in the end, he says, as for me, give me liberty or give me death, and sits down. And people who were there said that the room fell silent for several minutes. And people just thought about what he said. And just so you know, the resolution passed, and it was a very moving speech, and it did move things forward. Meanwhile, I'm just going to go back to Boston, because a lot of stuff is going to happen in Boston that's going to kind of set things off. Remember I told you about Samuel Adams and John Hancock, and they are always right in the middle of stuff, and the British were getting tired of them because they just stirred stuff up. So General Gage got an order from the king and said, whatever force you need, take it and find all the stockpiles of weapons these colonists have, and I want Sam Adams and John Hancock. Every militia had a stockpile of weapons. Now people are wondering, do we need to prepare to defend ourselves? So to lose that stockpile of weapons would be a bad thing. So the Sons of Liberty intercepted those plans. Somehow they found out what was going down, and that General Gage was sending British troops to go catch Sam and John, as well as the stockpile of weapons. So Paul Revere and John Dawes were sent on different routes to warn and to say, the British are coming, the British are coming. Sam and John, get out of here and move those weapons. So they did. So they were able to do that. They were able to move the weapons to a new location, and Sam and John got away, and they never were caught by the British. In the meantime, the British arrive at Lexington, where they thought Samuel and John were there, and the British exchange some shots with the Boston militia, the Americans were driven away, and they actually killed 8 Americans and wounded 10, and only one British soldier was wounded. So they were a powerhouse army, and they were going on to Concord. So nothing in Lexington, let's go on to Concord. So what happened is the Americans fell back, and they took up position in a hill across from North Bridge so that when the British entered Concord looking for guns and military supplies, the Americans were waiting for them. So the British are going around the city. They're looking for these supplies. They destroyed a few things, like a couple of cannons and some guns. But in the meantime, reinforcements arrived. So the Americans started advancing toward the British, and they engaged the British and sent the British fleeing. So that's pretty cool, because the British Army was one of the best armies in the entire world, and these little ragtag American militia, they sent them running. And so they regrouped and headed back to Boston, and as they headed back to Boston, the Americans engaged them all along the way. So it was a bloody march back to Boston. Now, as you can imagine right now, this changes everything, because now the Americans have engaged the British in battle. It doesn't matter if the Americans were defending themselves or not, because that's not how it's going to look to the British. So now there's a standoff. It wasn't like anyone said, okay, we declare war. It's like the war started, the battles started before the Declaration of Independence. And this was the very first one. And there, of course, are more. But I think that's pretty significant. A few months later, representatives came from all 13 colonies. They arrived in Philadelphia for the Second Continental Congress, and they moved step by step toward independence. They still were trying to be reconciled with Parliament, with King George, but it just wasn't working. And finally, on July 2nd, Richard Henry Lee, who was a representative from Virginia, he just stood up and he said, "We need to be free. We need to declare that we are a free country, because our rights are being trampled on. They're engaging us. They're shooting at us. And we're having to defend ourselves. And this is escalating into a full-out war." And so, on July 4th, 1776, the Declaration of Independence was signed. And John Hancock wrote his big signature and said, "I'm writing it so big because the king won't even have to put on his spectacles to see this." And Benjamin Franklin said, "Well, either we all hang together or we all hang separately." So meaning, wow, this is scary. Like, we are stepping out and we don't know what's going to happen next. But we do know what happened is that God allowed them to win the Revolutionary War. And then we had the brand new United States. And if not for the favor and blessing of God, we were in such a mismatched war with this amazing army, one of the best in the world. And here were the Americans. But the Americans were fighting for freedom, and the Americans were fighting for their rights to be protected, rights that already were given to them by God, and they knew that, and rights they had enjoyed as a people for centuries. And so God allowed the birth of the United States of America. And that is how it all happened. And I hope that you have enjoyed this little, well, it's been a real fast race through time, hasn't it? But I hope you have a better understanding of how one event kind of led to another. And finally, the colonists, the founding fathers and the founding mothers said, "Enough, we are free." So happy birthday, America. God bless the USA, and God bless you.
Thank you for listening to Finish Well Radio with Meredith Curtis and the Finish Well team. Please listen in every first Monday of each month at 7 p.m. Eastern Time here at the Ultimate Radio Network.